staff. Citizens' comments.
There are no other residents online.
Okay. So no other comments. The minutes for correction slash approval for May 16th, 2023. Approving an agreement and by that cut off. Approving an agreement by and between the United City, Yorkville, Kendall County, Illinois, and the Illinois Railway LLC.
Yeah, this is just that's a long title for an update to the cost for the repair of the railroad crossing at Poplar Drive. They had to go to bid again because they could not perform the construction the way they had first thought. They were going to do it in stages along the road, and which would allow traffic on either side at all times. But they found out that they have to raise the track so much that they're doing the whole 80 foot at one time. So they're actually going to construct a gravel road on the east side of the crossing to let the residents get around for the 5 to 7 days that it'll be under construction. That was the biggest increase. That was $20,000, I believe, $19,992. The rest of it was just updated costs. And as soon as we get this back to them, they want to proceed. They have, the track is actually laying there next to the crossing, so they want to get going.
Okay. Questions?
Is that 5 to 7 days?
That's the actual work. They said 5 to 7, and then the crossing will be open, and then but they'll have to do some repaving up to the crossing and then clean up all the mess that they made on the east side with the temporary road. They said 2 to 3 weeks total, but 5 to 7 days of people driving on that crossing.
Still not a long process then?
No. And they plan on working nights, they plan on working, they want to get it knocked out.
Is this just information? Do we need to?
This needs to be approved by City Council. So the recommendation would be to bring it forward to City Council, consent agenda if you're willing, regular agenda if not.
I guess that's regular or consent?
Regular, sorry, consent's fine.
Consent? Okay. Okay, we'll send it to Council for consent agenda.
Perfect, thank you.
New business two, Public Works Facility Discussion, Scope, and Cost Comparison.
Okay, so in a previous meeting, we had some questions just about how our two options for our public works facility compared to some of the other regional public works facilities. And so, Chris, if you're following along with PDF page 25, which is the overview that Kluger had provided for some of these square footage costs for some of the bid projects in the past couple decades that Kluger has worked on. So the short of it is that there was an article in, I think it was the Beacon, around the time that we had last presented this, that had stated Montgomery's public works facility was somewhere in the $15 million range. And the question was, why is ours at $23 to $30 million so different? And so Chris had run this analysis, and basically the answer is, they bid it out a couple years prior, so that's construction inflation of a few percentage points. So we've updated that to somewhere between 17.1 and 17.7 if it were to be bid today, which is about a $240 cost per square foot. And then they had initially done their own cost estimates, but then had been able to revise their estimates downward after they did some value engineering. So they get into the actual spec design before they go to bid. And they say, whatever, they are going to combine a wall or, shrink a room or whatever else they're doing, and cut out, about $1 million there, which we haven't done. We would do that as we go to bid and do some design drawings, with some things on site. And then additionally, our facility on the
this is the ultimate facility at 87,000 square feet, is larger. So we just showed, you know, that relative size of the building. So it's a larger building, you're going to pay more money. And then highlighted the equivalent construction bid that Montgomery publicized within our own cost estimate. So I'm going to scroll all the way down. This is the design booklet that you guys saw back at the start of the calendar year. And go to, let's see here. Right there. Is this subtotal construction cost with design contingency in F? So this is our $30 million ultimate plan, basically room for all the vehicles plus growth for like a 10 to 20 year period. So it does not include things like furniture, administrative expenses, other soft costs like architect fees. So Montgomery would be paying for those things outside of that construction bid. So apples to apples, their $17 million construction adjusted inflation cost estimate would be relative to our $22 million to $23 million cost here. So then additionally, I did talk to the Montgomery Public Works facility, Public Works Director. So they have a similar setup as we do currently, where their existing building is only like 10,000 square feet. So they are going to keep that, and we probably would too, maybe, depending on what we can do with the building that's cost effective. But at their facility, they already have a salt dome, they already have material storage bins, and they already have a fueling station. So those are things that do not add to the square footage here, but they add cost to our project. So when you back those things out, our ultimate bid is actually like $238 as a cost estimate per square foot. So we'd be right in line with where Montgomery is because we have a bigger facility. So why do we have a bigger facility? One of the reasons is we have a parks department. They do not, so we have more vehicles, we have more people. But generally, the facilities are kind of the same between those two. So we just wanted to kind of highlight, a couple of these other things. $226 per square foot for Pingree Grove, which is actually a combination of Public Works, Village Hall, just a tilt-up rectangle. I've been in it. It's nice. It's small, but it serves their purposes. And then some other things going back a number of years here, too. So our per square footage price isn't out of line if we build the ultimate building. Now, if we downsize to the smaller building, so if you remember the blended scheme that we had talked about, the main thing within it is that we basically just cut off a portion of the garage. We were just going to keep this area over here and make this, smaller or eliminate it full. So when you look at the total footprint of this building, the cheapest part is basically this garage. So when you cut it off, or shrink it and build a smaller building, our per square footage actually goes higher. So if we were to be able to do that with some of the maintenance bays and some of the office spaces, then our per square footage price would be lower. So something to think about. And then another, just Chris had pointed out, does it make sense to do, Chris Funkhauser, sorry, does it make sense to do like this L-shaped building? Wouldn't it make sense to condense it, share some wall space, shrink the footprint, maybe that'll reduce some of the cost. And that's something Chris had talked about, from Kluber, just as part of the design process, they would look at that, and they think that there is some potential value engineering there where they can reduce some of the cost. So all of this is just an informational item to show you, that Kluber, I think, has built more public works facilities or designed more public works facilities, I think, than any other architect in Illinois. And we chose them for that reason. So they've seen a lot and done a lot. And so we don't think that either the blended scheme or the ultimate scheme is too out of line, at least as far as modern needs go. But if we don't think that we can afford it, if we have issues with that size, there are architects. They basically can design whatever we want. We would just need to give them some direction to shrink it, value engineer it, or a combination of those two things. So that's all this is tonight, is just an academic exercise to get everybody comfortable with the design, the per square footage cost, and then explain how the Montgomery facility compares to it. So Chris, was there anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, since we provided this to all of you We have had an opportunity to bid portions of the Aurora Public Works facility that we're also providing the design services for. And I just wanted to bring this to your attention. Basically, the building and site costs for that particular facility, we're trending right now on a $240.98 a square foot number. If you add in the fuel station, their fuel station is actually going to be quite large. It's about $1.5 million. That brings us in a cost per square foot relative basis to compare it to yours at $247.86, so we're just under the $250 mark. And if we're just looking at building only, just the building itself, they're running about $185 a square foot just for building. But you got to keep in mind that all of the pad prep for the site was actually in the owner's site development package. So the reality is the true apples to apples for that project are sitting right about at $247 a square foot. And keep in mind that we have bid basically two-thirds of that project because we're doing it in stages to capitalize on the market conditions. So we have bid the whole superstructure and shell plus all the mechanical plumbing and electrical systems, all the major building systems. The last package that we're going to be releasing in September will include the full drywall, build-out, doors, hardware, the stuff on the inside that's not a major building system. And this dollar amount that I'm giving you, the $247.86, is based on the balance of the package's budget price that we carried in design development. So we're hoping that we might actually see a little bit of savings from that. The good news is the market has corrected itself about maybe 2%. It's not a lot, but there is a little bit of a correction. I didn't say that to you way back in November and December, so that's at least somewhat positive.
Correction is it's going down 2%?
It went down 2%. However, as of June 1, the union's got a 4.2% increase. So the net result is it's 2% more now.
Okay.
So like anything else, you know, we did look at that analysis when we did these projections for you. So this includes inflation projection plus all the union rate increases. The unions have never taken a deduct historically since all the data that we've been tracking. I wanted to make sure when I provided this to you, I talked to the unions directly. They gave me that traditionally per year, usually June 1 is their turnover time. They have seen between a, well, basically about a 3.85% to, on the higher side, about 5.2%. So I just kind of averaged it in there. I just used a 5% to be conservative included when I did these adjusted costs just for your benefit. And then, of course, as we all know, there was then a major market correction in 2019 going into COVID to now, which was fairly considerable. We do not see the market recorrecting itself. We just did a presentation, as I mentioned, to BART for Grundy County last week. Their board, specifically a lot of data on market, current market adjustments and long lead time items. Be happy to do that at any time with all of you, but the bottom line is we are not seeing the market ever going to now go back and correct. And we've looked at the entire historical trend. The bell curve is moving a little bit more rapidly vertically, but we do tend to see it just continuing, but at a lesser rate than it has been since 2019. We think this is the new norm and you're not going to see a correction anymore. We think it's already been corrected at this point.
So when you said that you bid it out in packages and some of the site prep was done by the owner, that means mass grading, infrastructure on site, and the concrete pad was all done by, like, Aurora through their own bid package?
Well, what they had, because Aurora has all their civil engineers are in-house now, they choose to do some of that design work themselves. Obviously, they were coordinating with our team the entire time because we also have some responsibilities like the major ComEd infrastructure coming in, the I-Corps coming in. We needed to know where we're distributing to the site and then ultimately from the building out to the rest of the outbuildings. All that was done generally internally. Plus, they wanted to do that because they were going to do an early site package anyways. Because there was a lot of mass excavation going on. And right now, they're about 80% through the site, and it's looking like they're going to turn that over at the end of July, early August. And our building pad as of today is ready to go. So we should be breaking ground on the foundations probably first week in August. So that's kind of a quicker update. I didn't have all those numbers for Aurora Public Works when I put this together, but I figured it's relative data to all of you to know what that is, and it's current. And generally, it's a large precast building, much like this is going to be. And as Bart mentioned, you know, I think it's a benefit to maybe take what we have design-wise now, but make it more box-like, like Pingree, but still have some flavor to some aesthetics on this. Really try to get that footprint down to more box-like, but still meet all your requirements. And I'm fairly confident through that process as design evolves, we should be able to trim several hundred thousand dollars off of this cost estimate right now based on what I'm seeing with the market conditions. But we'll definitely obviously continue to need to work together to make that happen. So that's kind of a quick update where we're at from November to now.
The one thing I did not mention was the Montgomery Public Works Director said that in their new building, they are planning to have 100% of their vehicles and equipment on your roof. So they have, they said a little bit of growth, but you know, comparative to what was our blended scheme square footage wise? Anybody remember off the top of their head?
111.
I had to be smaller than that.
It's smaller now. Hold on.
Because the old one is 87.
Oh, that's right.
Bear with me, I got it.
70,000. So that's slightly smaller than Montgomery, you know, 3,000 square feet. And that one would give us 100% capacity and then, like, no room for growth, at least vehicle wise. So that's a little bit of an idea of how much, you know, vehicles they have compared to us. So there's no action item here. Our next step in the conversation is, like, you know, pick a scope. And if the scope is like, we need to value engineer this more or figure out ways to shrink it, that might be another little interim study before we then, you know, choose an architect basically for the design package and going to bid and figuring out how we pay for it. So,
I think with Montgomery, are they leaving their salt dome as well?
They are, yeah, they're all leaving that in the existing facility. So that's, they're not rebuilding any of that.
So ours is a 5,000 ton, if I'm not mistaken, so it's a decent sized salt dome.
It is.
And we use about 2,000 tons annually
currently.
On average.
Yep.
Well, our bid package that we just released was like 2,500.
Yep, 2,640.
Maximum, so about double where we are. So that's it.
Just any comments? Just wanted to cipher something.
What are the individual public workshops for?
Pipe storage, workbenches, projects, clamps, just kind of the inventory that we have on the daily.
Tools and whatnot.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a tool room, park shop, parks tool room, public works tool room, electric shop. Then there's an open shop for future growth, sewer and water shop, sign shop, parts storage, fleet maintenance, hazardous storage.
Fleet mechanic yet?
We will not hire one until we move into the new building. We just don't have space nor the equipment for them.
That was the other thing I did not check in the Montgomery facility. Are they rebuilding a mechanic shop? Because they have an existing mechanic.
I don't know.
Don't remember. Okay.
I did not see that listed as part of the new from the press.
Okay.
Oh, of course, we did not do that building, so I'm just going by the information that's readily available.
Okay. All right.
The only thing I'm concerned with is I just want to make sure we have enough space for the employees. I mean, being a public works guy, being in a shop,
yep.
We got tons and tons of administrative room, and we're all crammed in a tiny little shop. And it's the worst thing of money ever spent in my life that I've ever seen. It's horrible.
Yeah, we definitely want the same thing.
If we could, we've got a couple of guys reach out to me. Hey, we'd like to have some input. You could just ask them what they think.
Oh, and they've, they, if they haven't, it's on them, honestly, because I've laid the plans on the desk for months when this was out. So, and I just printed another set off. So if they want, have them come right in.
Based on your email, Tim represented it to a few guys and came up with some things that were relevant, and timely that we'll incorporate whenever we move to the next phase too.
I appreciate that.
Yep. Yeah, and we'd also talked about having the facilities people join us at Public Works, yep. So that would be probably something we'd look at too.
Yep.
Thank you.
I'd be careful though when you try to compare us to Aurora because their revenue stream is much, 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 much greater than us.
I understand that.
When I heard that right away, a thing went off.
But I was asked to provide that data.
Okay.
It's fresh, so I just am simply bringing it forward that this project, the site development costs in the area of $240 to $250 a square foot with your needs appears to be in line with market currently.
Chris, have any?
I only had a couple thoughts or comments. I get the idea of having 100% coverage for the actual vehicles and equipment. That makes perfect sense to me. I don't want to compromise necessarily on that. And I'm not saying it's a compromise, but I'm saying
I think we lost you. Still there? Hello? Hello? Hello?
So, in terms of, having the staff get together, I'd rather cut down on the higher price per square foot area of the building and try to consolidate if we can. So that's kind of my thought, is keep as much of the garage space as we can, but cut elsewhere if we could. And then I just had a general question. We're doing tilt-up concrete for this. Has any consideration ever been given, or do we have requirements that, could this be a Morton-type building for any of this?
That's an excellent question. We could certainly explore that. My only concern there would be making sure that we're in compliance with the Energy Conservation Code. And some of the prefabricated building structures are very difficult to meet those requirements. So we would have to dance very lightly at taking a look at that and make sure that we're all on the same page with what that means. There may be a limited number of manufacturers that can meet those requirements. They do a fair number of farm buildings that are technically a utility structure, which allows some flexibility. But we're in a public building, which is actually going to fall us into a storage use for the garage, which is S1. And there's much more limitations on what we can do constructability there. We've run this analysis before. And generally, it's determined our most cost-effective route is to go tilt-up precast for this type of structure.
But we would look at that.
Oh, yeah. We would absolutely. Sure.
I would like to see that looked at, too.
Okay. Absolutely.
Because I do share some of Chris's. My priority is going to be get them all under a roof of some type and go from there with the cost. That would be my top priority. I know Chris mentioned that, too. I think I've heard that from a few other people, too.
Sure.
Okay. Anything else, Chris?
That's all I have for now.
Okay. Great, good. Yep. Okay. New Business 3, 2020. Oh, can I ask one more question about, so in our time frame, and maybe Brad can, we were talking about the chunk of money to do some more roads increase.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that going to come into this equation? Because we kind of need to know our expenses across the board. We know the water, or we're getting a good feel for the water, but are we going to be deciding the roads before we would decide this, or?
Well, that'll be up to you. I mean, the subdivision cluster is anywhere from 3 to 7 years out, and that timing is flexible depending on how
how soon you want to attack it, where the value proposition lies when we do our analysis on, you know, the condition of the roadway and where we meet it on the maintenance curve. And the way we showed it in the budget was we left out the subdivision cluster for now. We had the budget presentation about, you know, how much it would cost basically to, you know, to bond for it, what we could do with the infrastructure fees, et cetera. And then we put in the most expensive option for the public works facility and then bonded that out over, I think it was a 20 or 25 year period, and then showed us paying that debt service for a couple years within the 5 year budget. So during next year's budget proposal, I would assume that that would be you know, a topic of conversation and, you know, how comfortable you are with one or the other.
It's going to be that far down the road. I mean, either one of these, that decision, you got about like next January, February.
Yeah, I think that that's a reasonable time frame. I think between what we're doing with the Lake Michigan project and some other things, those are probably an imminent priority. And the design process we can enter into, you know, at any point. The cost of that, I think that we put that in the budget at, I think it was $1 million. So you know, we could close this meeting, stew on it for a month, have a conversation next month. You know, when we go out to do an RFQ, or even if we just go directly, let's say, to Kluber, you know, do a direct negotiation for the next phase, that in and of itself takes 30 to 60 days. You guys would have to approve that. And then you actually have to do that work, which is going to take a few months, too. So,
yeah.
So I don't think the timing is going to be a big issue at all.
Because I thought we were going to have that discussion as a council, and I didn't know if that was going to be a special type meeting. You know, we kind of know the big projects, and I don't know if we've ever actually really, you know, throw them all out there to see, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera. But
yep.
I just thought that that was coming, but maybe...
It is. I think the first shoe to drop is the Lake Michigan Water Project. So things are starting to come into, you know, long-distance focus at a staff level. So we'll be preparing some stuff. You know, you've got a WIFIA application or a letter of interest, rather, you know, expected to come forward here pretty soon. The engineers are putting together preliminary cost estimates, financing structures, et cetera. So that probably still has several more weeks before it's ready to go. But once that is digested, put into a report that you guys can read, do a presentation probably, you know, that'll be a month or two out here too.
Okay. Yeah, because I think that that's something we have to think about too. I mean, we do the road stuff, we do this or whatever, you know,
yeah.
Vice versa. So.
Sure.
Okay, new business 3, 2023 water main replacement contract B, contract award.
All right, we took bids for the contract B portion of the 2023 water main replacement last week, excuse me, on the 13th. Detailed memo in the packet. So as a reminder, this was the additional water main that was added into the mix at the basically the urgent pushing of IDNR. Again, this is all part of trying to get our water loss below 10%. So we have a limited amount of time to get quite a bit of water main replacement done. So the council you know, made a decision earlier this year and move ahead with the second bid package. So we were able to design it, get it out to bid, and we took bids again last week. So the low bid did come in above our estimate and above what the budget is for this particular project. So a couple things to note with that. So it's not the ideal timeline as far as bidding projects. Ideally, we're trying to bid between December and March for underground utility work. So, you know, we were a little bit later because of the late decision to add this into the mix. Also, there's a tremendous amount of underground work going on currently throughout the northern Illinois area. There's a tremendous amount of water main being placed, sewer being replaced, lead service line work all throughout the region. So there's going to be a higher level of contractor need for the next several years, which pushes us back to trying to get future projects out a bit earlier than what we did this year. So, and which is normally what we do. Again, we were just kind of backed up against the wall due to our IDNR comments and our decision to move forward. So in order to bring the project within budget, we are recommending moving a block of Colton Street from this year's project to the 2024 replacement. We were only going to do one block of Colton this year. We thought we could squeeze it in. Yeah, two blocks of Colton was on next year's project, so it just lines up with the work that was already going to be planned to do in the area. So by removing that one block, it'll save us roughly about $190,000, which brings us within budget. Therefore, we would recommend that moving forward. So from a contracting standpoint, if the city wants to move forward in that direction, we have to award at the full amount, and then we would issue a change order. We'd bring it back in July, reducing that block from the overall project. One more thing to comment on is this is kind of a combination of water main work, which is the vast majority of the work. About 70% plus or minus is related to water main, but we are doing a fair amount of roadway work because the projects are right next to each other. So about 30% of the project is related to roadway work. There's a detailed exhibit kind of behind the bid package that kind of outlines that, spells that out. So at this point, I'd be happy to address any questions anybody may have.
So it says that you guys are recommending that we accept the bid from Voyager because they're the lowest, but on the bid summary sheet it said we have the total that you said Voyager said it was actually the engineer's estimate.
Oh, you know what? That is correct. Yes. So you're correct, good catch. So it would be in the value of $1.983,000. Thank you for catching that. We'll make that correction, and then that is the that number will be, if you reduce it by $190,000, that still will be within the number. Yes.
So you're still, it's not Winger, you're still...
It is, I'm sorry, yeah, no, the number is the Winger number, it was just a typo in the memo. So that'll be, we'll correct that tomorrow, we'll get that into the to the packet. But I know the calculation was correct. If we remove Colton Street, that will still be within the budget.
Where does that put us percentage-wise if we put that whole part of that Colton Street on? Do you get down to 10 or not?
Well, the true calculation is when we go through and actually do the water audit. Mm-hmm. So that's difficult to say, but as part of our IDNR permit, we're required to replace basically all pre-1980s water main plus high break areas. So that's what we're doing. Colton Street is a very old section of Maine. We will catch that next year. You know, we have a couple of years to be able to get down below that 10%
percentage. So we don't have to be down to 10 right away here.
Correct.
Or just before the water gets turned on. That's the regulation requirement.
Correct. Yeah, but we wanted to do that. The council wanted to do that fairly as quickly. We could get that part.
Yeah. 2025 is where we're looking to have the construction done. On the like the accelerated pace, because that gives us a full year of data to get under that 10% for the water audit.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, thank you, Eric. So yeah, this year, next year, in 2025, very aggressive on the water being replacement. Yes.
And so you've got to have a feel though where the biggest culprits are.
Sure.
We do. We track, water main breaks using data that comes from Eric and his department. So we are capturing those areas. Certainly we know the ages of the water mains. So we're trying to target those areas.
We think doing the Colton in two different years would be more pain in the butt for the residents of that area too. So
yeah.
Doing it all at once sounds better.
It works out fine without losing any stake of life for sure.
All the calls I'm getting about the condos right now. Get it all done and over with.
Yeah.
Correct.
Chris? Okay, so this probably should be on regular agenda because this would be a vote, right? To the contract.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think agree with the regular, since of the price tag and everything.
Sorry.
Regular agenda instead of regular. Okay. Forward with that. New business 4, water main replacement contract B, engineering agreement.
Yep, this is just the construction engineering agreement to do the previously mentioned work. It's estimated at $198,000 in total. It's going to be paid out through the hourly rates, though, depending on what we see in the field. That includes about $10,700 in direct expenses for subcontractors. So we recommend approval of the EI.
Chris?
Yeah, I guess this do the same thing with this one too, if you guys agree.
Regular agenda?
Yeah. Thank you. Spending something on this. That gives you more chance to comment. New business 5, East Main Street improvements, balancing change order.
All right, East Main Street was our large water main replacement project last year. We completed the majority of the work during last construction season. A couple minor punch list items that were picked up in the spring. That work is now complete. So we're trying to wrap the project up. So as we typically do, we bring forth a balancing change order to kind of close things out. So the question at hand and the balancing change order basically would result in an increase by the contract amount noted in the memo, a little bit over $24,000 and change. One thing to note is that basically a year ago at the June 2022 Public Works Committee meeting and the subsequent City Council meeting, the Council added sidewalk. We had a budget of about $59,000 that was added to this project for sidewalk replacement work kind of adjacent to this project. We never formally adopted that in a change order per se. The work was approved, but we never memorialized it in a change order. So this change order, the balancing change order, accounts for that. So technically the 54, or actually it's 53,000 of the balance is included as a part of this.
So we would have changed that.
Correct.
We would have done that, then this would have been...
It would actually have been a reduction.
Yeah.
Reduction. Correct. That's correct. So I'll certainly recommend approval. Project is done. Project is wrapped up.
Pretty straightforward. Do we take a regular agenda, or do we want to set on this?
I think there's going to be questions on it.
We think, Craig.
I think I'm fine with consent. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's just a balance.
Previously approved it in some form. So
just put it on the consent, and if someone wants to pull it off, Business 6, water connection fee analysis and recommendations.
Okay, so let's think of this in two parts, both of which, again, are informational items, just for future discussion. So, this is one page in the exhibits provided by Brad and his firm. On how we come to water connection fee. So think of this in two ways. One is that you have to be able to legally justify whatever your water connection fees are that are paid on a per building permit basis for new housing starts to future buyers, builders, to be able to say, whatever we've set this dollar amount at, we've legally justified it through whatever calculation. Okay. So I'm going to walk you through that legal calculation first. And how we come to the water connection fees. And the second for you to decide is what's reasonable. So we may be able to legally justify something way up here, but you may look at it and say, that's ridiculous. Nobody's ever going to build in town. We don't want to do that. So we're going to, you know, reduce the actual connection fee to somewhere a little bit more. So this first exhibit is just the math behind the connection fee. So there's two sections that future residents should pay for. And again, the general theory is that you're going to be outlaying $100 million plus on water connection infrastructure that's going to serve future populations. So theoretically, those people, when they move in, let's say 5-10 years from now, you know,
haven't been paying the debt service payments and the water rates for those 10 years, but still get to benefit from them when they move in. So the first component of the water system is well 10. So that's the well that we talked about being needed near the high school, basically for, you know, current capacity for residents, and then for backup capacity after we turn on the electrician. So, you know, if you just look at the design of that, that well and the accompanying treatment plant would serve an additional 8,400 people. So, you know, we think that it'll be 33,000 people before we'll need to build another well, give or take, and a treatment plant. And so that additional population served is 8,400. So the project cost is $6.6 million, and so you just divide that up and you say, you know, each person that moves in theoretically owns a $788 share of whatever that, you know, well is. Okay, so just set that aside there.
So then you
population equivalency.
Okay.
Yep. So people. So then the second is all of your Lake Michigan costs. The water transmission mains, the connection fees into DuPage water, you've got a north delivery station and receiving station, a water ground storage tank, which is basically like a flat water tower. South delivery station and the south receiving station of the ground storage tank. So $120 million, give or take. And when you design all those things, theoretically, you're looking at, you know, being able to serve an additional 21,000 population on top of what you currently have. So for this one, because the existing residents are also going to benefit from the system, which is not really the case for this additional well and treatment plant. If nobody else moved in, you'd be able to get by just fine with your existing well and treatment. You know, you take the ratio of the future population compared to what we have, so 25,000 is what we have. This is going to serve an additional 21,000. We hope it's a 0.44 number. That's the relative ratio of new residents to existing residents. Multiply it out by all of your line item project costs, and then you come up with the same cost per PE calculation that you did up here. So in this case, each new resident's share of the Lake Michigan project, it's about $2,500 per person. So you add those two things up, you come up with $3,291 per person. Okay, so just kind of remember that. So then you take that, and our existing water connection fees are actually set into code and assume that depending on what type of house you build, you have, you know, one person per house, one and a half, three, and, you know, all over the board. So a condo in Bristol Bay is going to pay less for a water connection fee than a single family house in Wyandotte Ridge, because theoretically there's more people living in each single family house than a condo. So again, you just take that $3,200 number in general, so here's that where this shows up, PE, and multiply it by how many people we think live in a home, and you come up with these water connection fees. So our current one, based on our existing water system, is anywhere from $1,500 up to $5,500 per house constructed. Now this is going to get a little bit messier later because you have FELOCs, you have subdivisions that were built in different years, etc. So they're all over the board. We'll get into that here in a second. That's how you do the math and the justification. So, you know, your existing connection fee covers all of the wells and treatment plants you built, the radium removal services, the water mains, etc. And at some point, 6 or 7 years ago, you updated this figure, came up with $1,587 per PE, and then you've got these connection fees here. So there's a couple different options to think about. You know, we've legally justified a higher dollar amount. You know, where do we want to be in between? So you've got a flat connection fee. You know, there are towns, and we'll get into this too, that charge the same amount of share for the water system for a condo as for a single family home. So if you were to just take this $3,291 PE, you'd have a $9,000 water connection fee per house built. If you do just the new infrastructure, you know, you'd have anywhere from $3,291 up to $11,500. So when I looked at this, I was like, well, this water system technically is sized for, or pieces of it are sized for something larger than the population that we currently have. Really, the only thing that needs to be done right now is a well 10. But, you know, the radium removal, the water treatment plants, and everything else, those have already been built and existing residents have been paying for them. Theoretically, if somebody moves in tomorrow, they should still be paying a share of that. So just back ahead calculation, we said, well, what if you took this 3291 PE and assumed that half of this old connection fee is reasonably chargeable to new residents? You know, you come up with $4,000 up to $12,000, or, you know, all of it. We're just going to throw this Lake Michigan project right on top of, you know, all the old stuff. You come up with $4,800 up to $17,000. That's assuming you use this, you know, per household calculation. So those are like the upper ends of what we think that we can legally charge.
Right.
Yes. You know, reasonably under the code. Whether we want it to be that high is a different story. So a little bit of the side note here. That was all residential. So commercial and industrial under our code is actually charged by the water meter size. So if you have a giant industrial project, 6 or 8 inches, you pay whatever the market rate of that water meter is, basically. We do a calculation based on usage and all these other things. So, but, you know, on the top end, if you've got a 4-inch water meter, you pay $15,000 for the current. So we would update that to based on these new calculations. Okay, so then here's where everybody else is at charging. I have not had a chance to see if Oswego or Montgomery are going to be updating their fees for residential as a result of the Lake Michigan project. I would suspect that they will, but remember, Montgomery has like a $40 to $50 million share of the project, and then their $100 million is for water main relocation. So that's like Boulder Hill and all those other areas replacement. And Oswego is somewhere in that, I think, $50 to $60 million range, too. Whereas ours will probably be $70 or $80, maybe $90, depending on the share, because we're farther away. Okay, so their water connection fees, by virtue of paying less, are probably going to end up being smaller than ours, at least as far as maximum justification. So here's just the survey, you know, where Naperville is, where Bartlett is, and Bartlett recently connected to Page Water. So it doesn't look like they've updated it really since then. They're also probably mostly built out. You know, Naperville, kind of the same thing. You know, we're number one in the Chicagoland region for new housing starts, so, you know, we've got a lot more homes. Plainfield, Aurora, you know, across the board. So everybody is in the reasonable couple thousand dollar range. You know, are we going to destroy the local housing market if we charge $17,000 for a single family? Maybe. That's something we have to talk about. But we wanted to show you how we got to those numbers and the different options associated with it. That way, when the time comes later for us to pick one, you've got a little bit of background on it. So, if you look at the water budget, which I did not include an excerpt in here, we generate anywhere in the past few years from like $200,000 annually up to $700,000 or $800,000 annually, depending on which subdivisions get built, how many houses get built, etc. So, you know, doubling our existing fee or tripling our existing fee, you know, would generate hundreds of thousands of dollars that we could look to pay down, you know, what is probably going to end up being $8, $9, $10, $11, $12 million in annual debt service for Lake Michigan at some point or another, you know, to the tune of, that's percentages of, you know, a water rate increase. We're talking about the place of meeting tax of $700,000. Under our existing water rate structure, that's the equivalent between 15 and 17%, somewhere in there, of like an aggregate water rate increase. So, you know, if you talk about doubling $600,000 or $700,000 because your water rates have doubled, or your water connection fees have doubled, you know, you can generate a couple $1 million a year, you know, theoretically, through the water connection fee. So just something to think about. So that's the calculation. So then going back to Christie's memo here, you know, she outlines where the existing developments are at with remaining entitled platted lots. And now, remaining entitled platted means anything from, it's a farm field in Grand Reserve that theoretically they could put hundreds of units on, but there's no infrastructure yet, there's no plan to do it within the next 5 to 10 years, but there's a feedlock on it, to you know, existing infill developments that have one or two that don't have a feedlock. So she's categorized these, Grand Reserve, as an active feedlock. And Grand Reserve also, in case anybody didn't know, they built their entire water system within their subdivision and donated it to the city. So the city paid for none of the water tower, none of the water treatment plant. We basically zeroed out the water connection fees as a result of that. But Bristol Bay, which is actively developing, Prairie Meadows, which is not actively developing, but it still has entitled lots that could you know, take over there. Whispering Meadows, same thing. We haven't pulled a building permit in there since the recession. They do have 200, you know, sub-odd lots in there, just not at the feedlot. And then just going down the list. So, you know, and that's why, you know, we've done some math here just as an illustration. Not that this is a projection that we would say, like, oh, okay, you know, we're giving up $30 million if we don't do, you know, the highest water connection fee. Because, quite frankly, what's going to happen is, you know, Bristol Bay or another developer are going to come to us and say, yeah, you know, I can build out the rest of this, like in the south part of Bristol Bay, south of Galena, where it's currently a farm field and detention basin, but I need a feedlot, and then you would have to weigh that out. So, you know, the impact of water connection fees when you change them is usually extremely delayed and or reduced based on those negotiation factors. But the legal calculation is there. So that's it. We wanted to just, like, give you an idea of where these things could go, that we're, you know, looking at these, we're trying to identify the revenue streams, and just present it so that you're comfortable with it whenever it comes in front of you for an actual vote at some point here in the next months or 4 years, depending on what we want to do.
Okay.
Want to go first?
I was just looking at your chart and how Oswego charges.
Yep.
They're like by the size of the water connection. Is that a flat fee that they charge?
They
so
are
not,
a flat fee, yeah.
So it's not like ours where depending on the names.
Yep.
That seems to be, according to your chart, something that's relatively common.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
We've had that discussion about. We haven't had that discussion.
No,
before.
We have never had, I don't think that we've had a flat fee in 20 plus years.
Easily.
Yeah.
And I think probably there has to be an increase probably in this. The question is figuring out the right spot.
Yeah, you might be able to phase it in over a number of years. I mean, you might be able to negotiate with developers as they come to you. I mean, similar to like our land cash fee, it's, you know, there's no wrong way to do it. It's just something needs to be done, you know, unless if you want to say to future residents, we don't expect you to pay for any of Lake Michigan except for water rates, but that probably isn't fair to existing residents. So.
To Bart's earlier point about the delay, it could even be more pronounced with us because Grand Reserve has many lots to fill up, and then Bristol Bay is actually filling up the north part of Galena first, and there's no infrastructure on the south side of Galena. So that will delay them even more. So you're going to see a delay in any amount of permits coming in.
Do we anticipate places like Bristol Bay doing a lot more of the townhomes and more of the condos?
They are getting close to building out most of their entitled units north of Galena. So,
but there's nothing on the south side.
Correct. There's lots of entitled units on the south side, but to Eric's point, there's no infrastructure. The other thing, too, about delayed impacts is a lot of the times what will happen is you'll have to vote on something. It'll take you a couple months to discuss it. Smarter builders will go, oh, I'm going to get in and I'm going to prepay those water connection fees now. And then also, additionally, usually in the past we've gone to the builders and say, like, we've approved this. You have 6 months to either prepay, which is helpful because then that's a flow of cash that we didn't have previously, you know, or you're going to be socked with these higher fees later. So that's another thing that can, you know, sway the impact. So that's it. It's just food for thought, and, you know, probably take a month or two to digest it.
Yeah, this one here, I would suggest everybody read it over and over a few times because I imagine at some point you get realtors and stuff.
Absolutely.
Coming to us.
The builders and realtors will not be shy whenever we propose it officially to say, you're going to, you know, slow down housing, you're going to cause everybody to look elsewhere. And that's a real concern, so it's something we got to think about.
Something I think I ran into at one point when I became an alderman early on, I forget what it was, that the realtors were all upset with us, or they were.
Oh, it's probably when we did this connection fee.
Impact fees usually are kind of the same conversation.
Impact fee, that's
when
in front of us.
Most people started the PUDs and the development agreements.
Chris?
Yeah, this is a great one because it hits home for me. From a development perspective, impacts like these can be very detrimental. While the municipality is definitely trying to create the revenue stream, if there's not a feedlot, yeah, it's potentially something, if you don't negotiate it, you're not going to build around here. So it's that weighing the cost of, the need, because if you push it too high, you're going to push people out, and then you're going to be waiting until, the numbers, right themselves between one community and another, which could be 5 to 10, 15 years. So, I mean, we've seen that with other fees. So I'm not against raising fees, but I want to be very cautious on how we do it, since we do have, some developments with locks and others without. Our whole purpose of this is to create a revenue stream to help fund our water system. I don't want us to do something where we actually do the opposite of that, is where we push all development out. So it's just finding where that sweet spot is for the fee increase and the process of how we might be able to stagger it in. And, like Oswego, I know that was brought up that Oswego has a flat fee. That's their system is just a flat fee on all of their development. Maybe there's a different way of doing it as compared to the PD calculation and then multiplying that out. So I'm open to ideas and thoughts. So this is good that we have some initial information, and we'll see where it goes.
So the feedlots, people have subdivisions that have the feedlots, like, they're what, 5 years?
They're all over the board.
Yeah,
some of them are a couple of years, some of them are until the agreement expires. Grand reserve is in perpetuity because they satisfy
the right. I thought the grand reserve was like, you can almost take that one off the chart because there's nothing, there's no, we weren't there at that. So. Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions? A lot of studying on this.
All right. Is there any, I guess that's it. Is there any additional business?
I have just a couple of housekeeping items. So did we get that streetlight fixed? I told these people I would be getting back.
Which streetlight?
Ken and was probably Wendat Ridge, and there, you were on vacation. You got the email.
It should have been fixed. Yep, that was fixed that day, I believe.
I wanted to follow up.
Yep,
I'm going to follow up with them. That's
yep, that's what I passed right on. Yep.
Okay. And then the two bushes to be decided, they're not ours.
They are not ours.
So she, if she wanted to cut them down.
Yep.
She's allowed.
Yeah, there is no HOA. There is no anything, and it's clearly. It's in their yard.
Yeah, so I told her I would touch back with her on that.
Yes.
She wasn't sure. She thought they were ours. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's
no,
why I was glad
we
found that out.
We actually did them a favor and redid the sign.
Right. No, and,
yeah.
I explained that to her.
Yeah.
I went and met the person with her.
Yeah, that wasn't that. It wasn't.
I said, that
wouldn't
have happened. If
right. Correct.
And originally she conveyed it, because my wife took the message. She got the impression that they were going to chop the sign down. And I'm like, whoa. No. So I went mad. That's why I wanted to find it. And she said, no, I meant the bushes. The two bushes are one on each side of it. They're about 8 foot tall, 10 foot tall.
Yep. Maybe.
So I didn't
know
where
we
stood on.
Yeah, we did not plant those. We do not maintain that.
And same with that right of way that's back there. She's not required to maintain that. I know they've been mowing it. They
yep.
mowed all the way down to almost where Murphy's live.
Yep, that's fine. I mean, they're allowed. Thank you.
Yeah, basically right. That's what
yeah.
I thought.
I know that your subdivision also has a conservation easement there around the perimeter, correct? Around the outside edge of it.
Okay.
I think there's a conservation easement around the entire outside perimeter of your subdivision.
But a resident doesn't have to take it out. They choose not to, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And the other item that I had... I was approached, I guess, and I think I see something. Plano was having the same problem. Kids with motorized bikes, mini bikes, and they're flying up and down the trails in Wendat Ridge. So
okay, I'll let the
someone mentioned
well.
Maybe a sign. you know, saying that you can't, you know, I don't know how well that works.
They graffiti them. That's how well it works.
They just need to report it when it happens.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yep. And I'll let him know that you're passing that on.
Okay. Because I didn't realize it was getting to be that bad, but it sounds like our officers have a hard time catching them.
Oh yeah.
Or they take off on them and they're gone by the time they get there. So.
That is very true.
And I know there's a couple other areas that they play the game where they cross. They're in the county and then they cross it over and then they're back out in the county. And nothing there, not there, so. But yeah, it was just, and I seen Plano had something.
Yeah, I saw that on Spy. It was an article.
Yeah, so we're not the only ones that got that. And I think there's a lot on the north side.
We got the three blocks that are township. So,
well, I think isn't the Grand Reserve have a bunch of issues with that too? I think in the police reports they're always trying to, you see where they're trying to chase them down. So. I don't know what the best way of dealing with that is, but maybe you could do something. If a sign was to fix that, that'd be great. Put it at one end of the trail. And so that's all I had to eat. Turn to meeting. 7:01. Thank you.
Yeah, I believe it was